What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast, the Coin Empire podcast. Mel and I are here with Wes and Wes from Empire Gold and Silver, and we're just going to get straight into the topics today. Mel, what's our first question?
Well, our first topic is going to be, so you mentioned before that a lot of your profits come from shows. Mm-hmm. So why don't you guys just only do shows? Why do you have a storefront?
I think the easy answer is because I like to be at home sometimes. because you never know what's going to walk in to a shop, and that's what makes it kind of fun. You get people who have, you know, just change, which is most of them, and then you have people who have some really cool stuff that's usually family heirlooms that they've passed down. It's a chance to make a decent margin on just neat stuff that you don't get to see every day. So, I mean, for me, it's just the excitement of not knowing what's going to walk in. It's like a scratch-off lottery ticket, you know?
Right. There are people that just do shows, right? They don't have, like, a store.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know about much. Yeah, it's probably about 50-50. There's a lot of guys who literally only just have, like, a private office, and they only do coin shows, or they're by appointment only if they deal with the public. But, there's just a lot of guys who don't want to deal with the public because it can be a hassle. You have to softball everything to them for the most part.
Sure.
And sometimes I wish we didn't have a store, but overall I think it was the best choice for us.
Yeah, because I think that, like, because when you said, you surprised me with the figure that you said, 75 or 80%, I forget exactly what you said, but something in that ballpark, and I was like, okay, so they work 5 days a week and they make 20% profit, and then they work 2 or 3 days, like, why not just work those 3 days a week, have, like, you know, a storage store or whatever, just work those days, work every single weekend, but then have the weeks off. But that makes sense, that it's like, it's more of an adventure, because I would say, would you say that you know what to expect more at coin shows than, like, at a storefront?
Going to a coin show is kind of business as usual. Again, a lot of the same guys do the same coin shows on the same circuit. So you can see the same people for five shows in a row. But, you know, for guys who have coin shops through the week, they've bought new product and new material, so they bring it to the show and they have, you know, stuff that they can sell that's different.
Gotcha. So I'm interested. So, like, when you opened your first store, like, were you already in a decent financial spot, or did you go, like, pretty deep into debt, or were you, like, super stressed, or how do you start? Like, how much money did you, like, put into inventory starting out, or?
Yeah, talk about those early days.
Oh, well, when you're independently wealthy like me, nothing's a problem. No, I had a partner in my first business that I had, as a person that I had met in the industry who was on more of the refining end of precious metals. Inevitably, one of the things we get a lot of is scrap gold and scrap silver. So we have good relationships with different refineries. And this person, essentially, he put the money up and I did the work. So, you know, that was his donation or his part of the partnership. And mine was to run the business and make money. So over time, we both made money and everybody was happy.
And do you start with, like, a lot of inventory, or do you only buy what, like, you're pretty confident is going to sell?
I mean, for me, I would buy anything I can make a buck on, you know.
Okay.
How other people do it, they probably do it more like a real business and have it like a game plan. but, you know, I'll literally show up with checks and some cash at a show, and then it's game on. We just buy whatever we can, whatever makes the most sense, whatever people bring us, and, you know, sell it, make a profit, and do it again.
Have you guys seen that show, Rust to Riches? It's on Netflix. But so their business plan or their business model is they buy, like, a cheap car, fix it up, flip it, trade it for, like, another car that's kind of shitty, and then just, like, keep flipping it until they get to a car that they've made, and it, like, brings in, like, $100,000.
No, that sounds really interesting.
So basically, it's like they spend $1,000 on a car, and it's in horrible condition. They soup it up, so now it's worth maybe $15,000-$20,000, and they don't sell it. They trade it for another nicer car, also in crappy condition. So it's like they sell a nice souped up car for another beater, soup that up, and they'll do that 2 or 3 times, and until they can get, like, over six figures, and then they sell it, and the team gets a payout. So it's very interesting because you're taking like $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, putting maybe 5 to 10 in. They're doing the labor themselves, then selling it for 20, trading that for a car that could be worth 70, but is currently worth 10 or, right. or 20, right? And so it's very, they just built a, they did this crazy like Frankenstein build on a VW van and like stretched it out, cut the top and like smushed the windows down, like red tinted windows, put 6 tires on it. The back tires are massive, like dualies in the back. Yeah. It's just like the craziest Franken build you've ever seen.
He called it the Mad Max style. Yeah. Bit, oh, so nice.
And so
that.
They ended up getting $93,000 for it, but like it was just an insane. They put a drag racing boat motor in it, like this huge motor.
Awesome.
And it was in the cab of the vehicle, like not in the hood, like in the vehicle. They put like bulletproof fiberglass so you could like see it in the cab. It was
so it kind of reminds me, that reminded me of like what you were saying of yeah. like, you know, you buy something that you can make a buck off and then maybe the next thing you make $2 and then $3.
Yeah,
and
that's
then.
The idea. It's the speed of the turn is what I call it, because you just, the faster you can turn it, the more money you make. You know, obviously you don't want to buy something for $1,000 to make $10 and you have to hold it for a month. So
right.
it's really volume that we're looking for most of the time.
So do you like, obviously whenever you buy stuff, you have to hold it mm-hmm. at your store.
Correct.
How do you feel like your space is? Like you feel like you're like, hey, we're running out of space. It's time to sell some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's more like we're running out of money. We need to sell some stuff. You know, we always seem to find like nooks and crannies to shove stuff into. So right. We do get tight on space. So we usually, sometimes we'll get to where I'm like, we got to sell this. This is too bulky.
Sets.
Yeah. Mint-proof yeah. sets. All that stuff that's super bulky. You know, eventually we get to the point where we're like, yep, it's got to go. And we're actually to that point right now. We were just figuring out some of that stuff today. So, yeah, it happens.
It's funny you said mint proof. We've been going through the mint proof set in like the last few days and like really organizing it, trying to get the shelves full and like organize back stock. And it's, we have so many of some years and then like two of another year.
Right. They multiply.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It's the back stock is nuts. I don't know. And like, we don't sell a whole lot of them.
Yeah. It's not super popular. And like you said, they seem to multiply. Doesn't matter what you do. You wake up and there's more of them. So
yeah, it's like every, you'll like max out the shelf and then it's like, wait, another full box? Like I just barely got the full box on the shelf that we had. And she's like, all right, cool. There's 100 more.
Yeah, just super, super labor intensive. That's the thing I dislike most about it. It's like, it takes so much time to get a list.
Right.
You know?
So. Yeah. Speaking of mint set, proof set, why, like, I was just curious because like some of them have the prices on it. It's like, you know, $8 or like $5. And then like one might be 100 or like 200. And it's, you know, maybe it's 1 year different or a few years different. Like why is that? like why are some years like way more valuable?
Well, it comes down to population. Like 2012 proof set. That was during like economic decline, like kind of everything. They didn't make as many of them, so population was really low on that. I guess they didn't really sell many of them then either, yeah. because people didn't have the spare money to buy that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, usually it's after the fact, you know, like a year or two later, everybody's like, "Oh, I didn't get that one," and then nobody can find it, and so
right.
it ends up because they didn't sell many. The mintage is a lot lower, and it ends up being pretty good. So yeah, there's, but I mean, the year after could be total garbage. You never know. It's hit and miss with that stuff.
Sure. And what year did they start making the mint sets?
In the 50s?
Something? Yeah, no, I mean, they made them back into the 40s. Yeah, like there's stuff with Walking Liberties and stuff like that, too. Yeah.
We found an 83 mint set, which, like, they didn't make a lot then, right?
They didn't make any that year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
they're all, yeah, they're all special, like secondary market.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, but some of those
other
coins are
real, together.
Not rare, but like low mintage. So like even like the half dollars and the quarters are all better.
Sure. Yeah. Another question we were curious about. So like, is there like a simple? The answer is probably no to this. Is there a simple formula for like deciding when to just like take something to the bank? Like it's not worth holding or collecting, like especially with the traditional quarters, dimes, nickels, and pennies.
I mean, for me, if it's, you know, after 1964, like 1965 quarters and up, you know, we spend them or take them to the bank.
which 1964 was the last year they did silver, right?
Yeah, for quarters. So in and you know, half dollars, they made 40% 65 to 1970. So really 70 forward and half dollars, we spend those guys. But
even the proofs?
Yeah, if it's if it's a proof that's been mishandled, yeah.
Yeah, if it's been circulated.
But yeah, like nice proof rolls are worth more, obviously. But I've spent plenty of proof half dollars and quarters. So it happens.
Have you ever left one as a tip?
I'm not that mean. Yeah, but no, Ike dollars, maybe. I've done that before. People love those.
So Taylor wanted to ask about a little bit about toning and like what impact does toning have on the value of the coin?
Like silver eagles, there's some people out there that that like the nice natural toning when they get like a rainbow color, or like a blue, nice blue tone, yellow, that kind of thing. Like the some of those in like old PCI holders and stuff like that trade for a decent premium. Like people go out and are seeking that kind of stuff because they look really pretty and they tone naturally. So,
but would the average buyer probably just rather have a nicer looking coin, like a more traditional looking coin? It's more particular that people want the toning.
Probably so. Yeah, I mean, I know whenever I worked here at Chattanooga Coin, if we had like some toning or spotting on some silver eagles or something like that, like your dad would just have me go dip them off, like clean them up a little bit. Because most people are wanting retail friendly kind of stuff. Like it takes a special person to want toned stuff, pretty much.
So then that's a good segue to cleaning coins. Like what's the big deal with that?
Like why would you do that?
Because I feel like some people don't like it. But like to me as like a total novice, it's like I'd probably rather have a cleaned coin.
Yeah.
The grading services don't like them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, there's a right way and a wrong way. Yeah. You know, and cleaning has this like stigma attached to it, like, oh, that's bad, that's bad. But it's actually, I mean, even the grading services do what they call it conservation.
Okay.
So like say you have a coin that's got PVC on it, or it's got something on it that's not attractive, you know, you can pay to have the services clean that and take it off, but not in such a way that the coin's not going to grade, it doesn't damage it. So I think when most people think cleaning, they think, oh, somebody took a Brillo pad. You don't want to do that. There are ways to clean coins, like in ammonia and different types of like solutions that will take toning off if you don't want toning. But it's really, we clean coins all the time. Everybody in the industry does. So, you know, it's usually newbies that come in, oh, you don't want to clean a coin, you don't want to do that. But really, I would say, gosh, I can't throw a percentage on it. There's a lot of coins out there, okay, and holders that have been cleaned, for sure.
Gotcha.
For sure, because I've made them, and every dealer in the country have made them. So there's good cleaning and bad cleaning. I guess that's the long and the short of it.
Yeah.
And do some people like a dirty coin look versus a clean? Or
sure.
It like looks more authentic to some people.
It's original. We call it originality. So like coins, especially say like silver dollars from back in the 1800s, have like what we call the original skin, where it's never been dipped. You can tell it's got like almost like a little film on it, but it makes it look original and it's never been messed with. And then some people like the coins to be dipped. They want it to look as bright as it possibly can. So, you know, when you were talking about toning earlier, there are people who will pay lots of money for a beautifully toned coin if it's attractive. But there are also collectors out there who just want blast white, no toning. They want it to be as white as it can be. So, yeah.
Yeah, we just had you know, Jackson Wingfield.
Yeah.
He works here in Chattanooga. He has Wingfield scale. Little free marketing there for you. He came in the other day and he was talking to me because what he does, or he said he wanted some Morgan dollars. And he was like, I don't care what condition they're in. I just want them to look clean, like bright.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, we can do that. Like some good, very good, whatever. Because he said what he does is if he goes somewhere, you know, he tries to have a meeting with somebody and they're like, oh, I'm too busy, I can't meet with you. He has this business card, but it's a flip. And then he puts a coin in there with his business card and he's like, we'll give him this. And then they call him right back.
Gets their attention.
Yeah. That's so he was idea. Like, I don't want to spend a lot of money on them. I just, but they have to look good.
Sure.
They don't have to actually be good because they won't know.
Yeah.
These people.
No clue. Yeah.
No, so I was like, that's a really good idea. I was like, I need to start doing that.
For sure. And like giving somebody a cleaned coin for that, that's like, looks bright and shiny is perfect because it gets their attention. You don't want to, you can actually buy those types of coins for less money and it works for your purposes. Sure. So, yeah.
Like you said, it's like the shinier coin is definitely for the novice. It's like, oh, this is a nice coin.
It's supposed to be shiny.
Right. It's like, it's worth the same thing, you know, maybe even less to some people, but it's like, it looks nicer.
Right.
So he came in and was talking about Lewis and we gave him the tour and stuff. And he was talking to Mel for a long time, just about the good old days. And
I took him back there to the vault, which I normally never do. Sure. But he was like, yeah, I just kind of want to see. He's like, the place looks really good. And I was like, well, you haven't even seen all of it.
Yeah, he was probably surprised he wasn't tripping over stuff.
He was surprised. That's exactly what he said. He was like, normally there's boxes all over the place up here. Yeah. I was like, yeah, not anymore. So he went back there and he's like, oh, you've got a whole truckload. So I was showing him how to use the NGC scanner because he said he collects for his kids. And he's like, I'm worried that they're not going to know really what they have. And I said, well, you could get some graded ones and then they could scan it and it gives them a ballpark to start. And so I just took one out, just picked a random one. I wasn't trying to pick anything expensive or anything. No. And I scanned it and I was like, see, it says, you know, $75. So that's somewhere to start. He goes, oh, I'll take that for $75. I was like, we can scan a few more if you want. So he ended up getting a few, and then he talked to me a long time about the scales.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a great company. He has a great company. We use the scales personally.
Yeah, he said, he took one with him to see if he could get it to work.
One of the old ones?
One of the old ones. He said he custom made, it has pounds and troy ounces on the back and a little switch. And he said he took it to the service department. The service department said, we haven't had the parts for this for 20 years. So there's no way we're going to be able to fix this.
Tubes in there. Actually, when I first got into the business on my own, your dad gave me one of those scales, one of those old big ones that has the scale part not attached to it.
Right.
I actually had to take it down to Wingfield to have them fix it. So they can do it. I don't know if they have the parts now. This was 20 years. Probably 15 years ago. So
I mean, he said it was 40 years old.
Oh yeah, it was old. Yeah, when
he
I
said
got
he
it.
Yeah, he said they hadn't had the parts in 20 years.
Yeah.
40 year old scale. So he's like, if you guys need a new one, like, let me know. But like this one's tapped.
Yeah.
And like it was an extra for us anyway, but it was just interesting.
Yeah, well, this goes to show the quality of the scale. You know?
Yeah. Like, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still have I'm pretty sure all the scales that we use are his.
Yeah, all two of the scales we have are his.
Which is really cool. So yeah, it was super interesting. And like he's, you know, what, at least in his 70s. And he's still
he's the same age as my dad, so he's
still
75.
Oh yeah. He's still like driving the company truck and he's still like invested. And I was like, all right, this guy's committed.
Yeah.
So I tell him how many pennies I weighed on one of those scales.
Oh, millions. The Roto-Rooter guy was like walking through the room in the back and he's like, there's probably $1 million in coins in there. And it was only pennies. Like, it's just pennies. And I don't know what Gina said, but everyone was just kind of like, yeah, don't mention it. Yeah, don't bring it up. It's just pennies. Yeah. It's all junk in there anyway. All right, we're going to call it there for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you want a question answered on the show, you can email your question in to AskCoinEmpire, like the podcast, AskCoinEmpire@gmail.com. We'll get that answered. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next time.